Hello and welcome to the Practice Drill Podcast, episode 38. This week, we're talking about some major talking points within the NRL. Then we move on to the Swans crash back to earth, disappointingly falling to the Western Bulldogs in round three. Then, bit of Australian cricket, couple of ODI series coming to an end, one of those being the World Cup and the Aussie women bringing home the silverware. And we finish off talking about Anthony Davis's comments on the Lakers season. Shout out to Sencho, as always. And I'm joined by Blaze McKee. Blaze, a lot to get into today, but how have you been? How's the last week of sport been for you?
Yeah, very good. I guess we'll get into it. But, you know, we started the week on Thursday night. Me and you got together and watched some quality rugby league in the Titans versus the Tigers and a quality AFL game in the Swans and Bulldogs. You know, we'll get into those, I guess, later in the podcast, but that started a great week of sport for us.
Yeah, look, wasn't the Thursday we wanted, getting a couple of our friends together, going to the pub and watching those games. But look, you can't always watch quality sport. You've got to sometimes sit through some of the painful games to really, you know, acknowledge and respect those good games of sport that you watch. But guys, if you'd like to stay up to date on all things NRL, AFL, Union, Cricket, and NBA, go and follow us on Twitter at @T_PracticeDrill. Been really active on there, sharing a lot of content. I was posting today about the college basketball, the NCAA Final Four tournament finished today. Kansas winning it all in a huge comeback in the final over North Carolina. For those who don't know, that's Michael Jordan's college team. But Blaze, let's get straight into it. And I said at the start, we're going to be talking about some major talking points in the NRL. And I think it doesn't get any bigger than the news of Tom Trbojevic being ruled out with an MCL tear. Now, Manly reckon he'll be back in about 4 weeks. Some people are saying it's up to 6 weeks, considering he needs that surgery. Obviously, you, a man who we've spoken about in the past, done ACL injuries, may not be used to what an MCL tear. It's obviously a way shorter time on the sideline, but do you think it's more towards that 6 weeks or 4 weeks?
Yeah, I actually, when I first tore my ACL, I also tore the MCL. And first of all, I think it's pretty impressive that Tommy Turbo, I think, played the whole second half with that tear, because I certainly remember when I did it, you know, my ability to move laterally was pretty much non-existent. So, you know, that's a credit to him and, I guess, you know, the toughness of those NRL players. I think in terms of the 4 to 6 weeks, Manly would probably look to push it out to the six-week window. I think we know Tommy's, I guess, history with injuries, obviously more so the hamstring than the knee, but I think that, you know, they all interrelate with each other, and I think they'll definitely be maybe on the safer side. You know, looking at their draw, they've got an okay draw coming up the next kind of month after they had a pretty tough start. So, yeah, I guess where do you see the Seagulls for the next month?
Look, I'm pretty concerned, because if you have a look back at the start of the 2021 season where Turbo was out with that hamstring for the first 4 weeks, they looked a shadow of the team that they ended up being towards the back end of the year. So obviously he really controls that team. Obviously, you know, you have a look at the games, DCE is really in control of that side, but I think it really all does start with Tommy Turbo. So I'm concerned. I'm having a look at their draw here. They've got the Knights this week. I think they probably lose the Knights, who will be keen to bounce back after being held to zero against the Sharks. Titans, they'll get hammered. Gold Coast Titans, probably one of the best teams in the NRL. Sharks, South, Tigers, that's kind of the window that you're looking at. So you're right, maybe not the hardest games. They're not playing, you know, those Penrith, Melbourne, Roosters kind of teams that have gotten off to an okay start. But look, they're playing some sides that have come out and looked better than what we expected, like the Knights and the Sharks to start the season. So I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing. But another NRL talking point, not the greatest news if you're a Broncos fan. Shout out to my dad. Payne Haas and Albert Kelly. Videos come out of them getting into it. It was not a fist fight. I want to start off there. It was basically a bit of a bit of a jumper punch, which we see most weekends in most codes around Australia. What did you make of the video? Because we spoke just before we went on air, like it looked like Albert Kelly was, you know, fairly out of it. What did you make of the first time you watched the video?
You know, you see the big headline about two players punching on it, and you probably expect it to be a bit more serious than what it was. You know, in the scale of things, it's probably not too big an issue, but, you know, we've got here, it's the 12th off-field incident for the Broncos, and I don't think a lot of them have been very big, but they, you know, they have obviously a bit of a history of having some little issues off the field. And I think these are two probably the leaders within the club. So, you know, to see them go at each other is probably not the best look for the club. And, you know, having said that, it's probably not the biggest issue. And I think the media probably did beat it up for a few days there.
Look, I'm going to take the opposing view. I do think the media definitely, with those kind of headlines, that maybe grabbed you in. And I think that's sometimes the problem with sports journalism is, you know, you, like with any journalism, you need those big headlines to get views. And unfortunately, it doesn't actually portray. And I think luckily in this case, it doesn't actually portray what happened. But look, the Broncos have had some big off-field incidents. And I think they're probably including in this statistic that we found is probably Anthony Milford getting arrested for some stuff off field. And it's just never good for building culture, especially with, you know, some stuff that's happened with the Broncos over the last 24 months with a bit of disconnect from some of the old boys. And, you know, that's a big part of the Brisbane club. But I just think it's absolutely horrible timing for the Broncos. They've lost their last two, got pumped by the Cowboys, didn't put in a good effort at all against the Warriors on the weekend. And now for the next 2 weeks, they have the Roosters, who have been a little bit inconsistent to start the season, but not too bad. And a red hot Panthers side who are undefeated and will probably come into that game against the Broncos still undefeated. So, yeah, it's really not looking good. But I think it's also a really ugly look for, even though there wasn't really a big brawl or a punch on, I think it's a bad look for Payne Haas, to be honest. You know, it just his attitude, the demeanor that he's kind of showing in that video, a little bit alpha mentality. And obviously he needs that as a forward, but it's just not good to see him trying to oppose that onto one of his own teammates, especially when, you know, they're trying to rebuild and get back to the finals, which I may have stupidly predicted at the start of the year, but I guess time will tell. But yeah, well, on to the final talking point here of the last few days of the NRL. Ponga has reportedly asked to have a formal interview with Wayne Bennett and the Dolphins. I think this is absolutely huge news. You know, I want him to be at the Dolphins. I think that's huge. They need someone like him who gets bums on seats, to be honest. You know, he's one of those players, and if he can get used a little bit better than how he's being used so far for the Knights this season, I think that's going to be gone. But what do you think this means for the rest of the NRL?
Yeah, it's obviously a huge move. And, you know, Ponga, we've spoken about it before, is one of probably the only few guys in the NRL that can really take that superstar and be, you know, the face of a new franchise. Obviously, it's going to be a very difficult task, I think, up there. And I think a lot of people underestimate probably the challenge that the Dolphins have ahead of them. But a guy like Kalen Ponga is going to, as you say, bring, you know, bums on seats, but also attract other players. And obviously, there was the news last week about the Storm re-signing their sort of three players, but leaving Cam Munster out. So I guess that's another name that the Dolphins will be looking at. But, you know, the spine, I guess, is spoken about so much these days in the NRL. And I think the fullback, you know, we talk about guys like Tommy Turbo, is becoming more and more important. And if they can get a signature of Kalen Ponga, I think that'll be huge for their chances.
I think it will also bring in Cameron Munster, who you just mentioned. I think it'll just be a domino effect either way. If they sign Munster first, I think it'll bring Ponga. If they sign Ponga, I think it will bring Munster. So, look, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. And I think Wayne Bennett, of all people, he'll be able to lure in someone of Kalen Ponga's ilk. And just to finish off, shout out to possibly the worst game of NRL in its history. We spoke about it just in the introduction. Titans, Tigers. I mean, first half, I think us, everyone who was at the pub that we were at, kind of stunned at what we were watching. And then in the second half, everyone seemed to embrace it. People were wanting teams to fail their captain's challenges, to, you know, to give away penalties, to somehow make an error right in front of the line. And to be honest, it just kept happening. You know, if people had bets on an error occurring in a set, they would have been millionaires by the end of the night. So, look, wasn't great. As a Titans fan, you know, pumped. We're clutch as. I've never seen a more clutch team ever. So, look, not great, but happy as a Titans fan to get away with the win. But, yeah, absolutely awful. But we'll move on to topic number two. You've labeled this topic as Swans crash back to earth. As I said, I wasn't going to try and get high on the Swans like I have in the past. They lost on Thursday to the Bulldogs, 71-60, respectable, very respectable scoreline. But it could have been much worse, as the Dogs kicked 17 behinds. That's unbelievable. What did you make of this game? It was obviously on while we were watching that appalling Titans-Tigers game. But, look, just seemed like nothing was going the way of the red and the white.
That headline for myself is probably a bit hyperbolic. But, you know, last week I predicted the Swans to go 3-0, and I thought – I think this loss probably shows that they're, you know, they're definitely in the race for finals and a premiership contention, but they're probably not up there in that top favourites group. In terms of the game, it was probably a little bit scrappy. I think, you know, you spoke about the Bulldogs kicking 17 behinds, and that was definitely a factor in the first half, where it just felt like the Bulldogs were in complete domination, but you looked at the scoreboard and it was quite a low-scoring game. As you say, we were watching it with the rugby league, so maybe that, I guess, the dourness of the rugby league crept into our thoughts when we were watching the AFL. But to me, it seemed like a bit of a nothing game until the last kind of quarter, and then all of a sudden you realised the Swans were pretty close. But I guess the big talking point was the free kick count, and you were very vocal on the night. So I guess we'll just go to you, and what were your thoughts on the umpiring?
Look, obviously, we were mainly focused on that Titans-Tigers game, but yeah, to see that free kick count, it's just not meant to happen. Like, you're not, there's no game in any sport, don't care what it is, that there's a 31-14 penalty count. You know, most of the time it needs to be pretty level. Max, I'd say 5 ahead, max. But, you know, that deficit is just too huge to even comprehend. You know, 16, it's, you know, they beat us by more frees than we even had for the whole game, which just doesn't make sense to me. So I was really disappointed by that, but it's nothing new. There are some teams in the AFL that look, their fans will want to hide it. Shout out to Hawthorn. Shout out to Richmond. Shout out to the Western Bulldogs, who they just get everything. They always have. They just get absolutely everything. So, look, it felt like Groundhog Day, to be honest, because it just was back to that 2016 grand final. I still think that's probably the worst umpiring of all time. So, look, it was disappointing, but just some things that just weren't there. And, you know, the referees had the whistle too close to their mouth the whole night. So it was really disappointing. But, you know, to try and be a little bit more objective, it was a big win for the Dogs, considering they lost their first two games. Josh Dunkley, Bailey Smith, they were huge. 31 touches each. It just seemed like Bailey Smith always had his hands on the ball in that game. You know, he's really impressive, and I think he's building really nicely. But for the Swans, they're going to bounce back and have a huge, huge, huge win in front of the home fans at the SCG against North Melbourne. North Melbourne probably nowhere near the Sydney Swans just at the moment, again, being objective. I think the Swans probably are going to be very keen to go 3-1. I think it's safe to say Swans 2022 AFL Premiers come September. But yeah, anything else across the round for you, mate?
Yeah, I think, you know, touching on the Swans, we saw a former Swans player, you know, Jordan Dawson, moved across to Adelaide in the off-season there, and, you know, managed to kick the winning goal after the siren in the Adelaide showdown between Adelaide and Port. And I think, you know, I think it was a few weeks ago about how good it was to have live sport back and crowds back. And, you know, we got a crazy moment with Buddy kicking his 1,000th, and it was pretty cool to see, I guess, that moment over in Adelaide. It was a sold out crowd, and that local derby really goes off.
Yeah, it looked insane. And I saw, can't remember, just on one of the social media platforms, but saying that it was one of the great April Fool's Day pranks with Jordan Dawson's kick. If anyone missed it, basically he's a left footer out left-hand side of the 50, and he sort of started it out to the right, and it looked destined to go through for a behind, and it just slowly went from right to left. I don't know how he did it. Because, you know, we're big Buddy fans. He's always left to right. He just kind of hooks them in. But Dawson doing it the other way. And it was absolutely crazy because you can see in the background, as you said, live sport, you get that raw emotion from the fans on the TV. And you could see some of those Port fans cheering. It's gone through for a behind, but it's snuck its way in. And I think that was the perfect way to welcome him to Adelaide. And I think him with Rory Sloane and Crouch, they're just going to be a really hard team to come up against. They may not make a push for the grand final, but I think they are going to be a team that you probably don't want to come up against. But we'll move into our third topic, and look, a bit of a mixed week for Australian cricket. You had the men's side losing the ODI series against Pakistan 2-1. Not a bad result, but the Aussie women's bringing home the ODI World Cup. It was absolutely crazy. But, mate, I'll get you to start off with the men's ODI. It looked like Aaron Finch kind of found his form again.
You know, that was the big storyline to come out for the Aussies. Obviously, you know, David Warner, Steve Smith, Marnus Labuschagne were all missing, you know, a few of their key bowlers as well. So I think the 2-1 loss is not the end of the world for the Aussies. But Aaron Finch scored 23 runs across three games, and two of them were ducks. So got 23 runs in the first game and then followed it up with two ducks at the top of the order. And I guess the questions are just mounting on his position in the Aussie white ball teams. Obviously, he's the captain. And, you know, I guess Andrew McDonald's come out and supported him and said, you know, they're going to build their next T20 World Cup around Aaron Finch. But you know, it's harder and harder to support him with the runs that he's scoring, and then also the guys coming through. We saw Ben McDermott score 100 during this series, and then you've got guys like Josh Phillippe also performing very well in domestic T20 tournaments. So the longer this run goes on, I think the more pressure is going to fall on Aaron Finch.
Yeah, look, at his best, he was absolutely incredible. And when I think about his best, I'm probably looking at a 2015 kind of Aaron Finch. But, you know, we're 7 years on from that. And as the captain of the nation, you had three innings and you scored 23 runs. Like, it's not a good look. It's not leading by example. And it's obviously nothing personal, but I think it takes an absolute goat, like one of the best batsmen for a nation, to be at his age batting consistently at the top of the order. If I'm Australia, I'm probably starting to move on, and I would probably use that series against Pakistan to be like, look, Aaron, stay home. Don't worry about it. We'll send some other guys over. And if they do well, then that's the way we're going to go. But if they don't, we'll hand it back to you because we know you've done it before. And just pray that he finds some form, but it hasn't been the case here. Babar Azam, on another note, led Pakistan to victory. He's seriously, we always talk about Kane Williamson, Joe Root, Steve Smith, and Virat Kohli. I don't think you can say those four now without Babar Azam. I think you've got to kick one of them out or you extend it to five because he is just such a gun. 276 runs in the series. He's just unbelievable. He's the only batsman to be ranked in the top five in all five, in all formats. I'll hand it over to you as a batsman, mate. He is just unbelievable.
Yeah, very classical player as well, and I guess has that ability to play over three formats in the ODI series in particular. He plays always, he's always around the 100 to 120 strike rate and really anchors the innings for Pakistan. I think we've spoken about him before. He's probably, you know, one of the, probably the most underrated cricketer in world cricket. I think Pakistan obviously fall away sometimes and don't play the big countries very often. So he's not in the limelight, you know, all the time. But when he comes up to these big series, he's done it before against Australia and he's done it again. And he was also very impressive in the tests as well.
So on the women's side, Australia bringing home the ODI World Cup. Absolutely unbelievable. They beat England by 71 runs in the final. It was one of the GOATs of world's women cricket, Elisa Healy. My God, 170 runs in the final. That is just unbelievable. Look, I had a cricket grand final the other day. I scored 3 runs, not out. Thought I was the GOAT, but 170 in a World Cup final. It's unbelievable. 509 across the tournament, just proving how unstoppable she is, named player of the final and the tournament. Look, is she better than her husband? Probably, yeah. I would go that far. What do you think about her performance in the tournament and, you know, the final as well?
You know, we all know the quality of player that she is, but by her own standards, she's probably been a little bit quiet this year, you know, through the Ashes and through, you know, their series with India before that. But to step up in a final in the big moment and opening the batting as well, I think, you know, that's the real stage for the best players to stand up. And, you know, 170 lays a pretty good platform. And I think once they've done the job there and scored, you know, over 350 in the first innings, the job was pretty well done. And the bowlers managed to come in and get it, you know, finish it off.
Yeah, so it's definitely great for the Aussies and Elisa Healy and some of those vets in that team to finally get over that ODI World Cup hurdle, considering they got knocked out in the semi-final of the 2017 tournament. So I know none of them will be listening to this, but we'll put it out there. Congratulations. Absolutely huge. And Australian cricket, we're just bringing in all the World Cups. You know, we're looking to go back-to-back in the men's T20. And then we're going to gobble up that world test championship, no doubt about it. Now on to our final topic and a bit of an interesting one. We have spoken about the Lakers in the past and their struggles, but Anthony Davis has come out basically defending the Lakers season, blaming injuries for them not being able to reach their potential. To put it into context for those who may not follow it or do follow the NBA and haven't noticed it, the big three of LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook have only played 21 games together. 82 games for an NBA season, you know, you're looking at about a quarter of the games being played together. And during that stretch, they went 11-10. So that's above 500 basketball, winning over 50%. And if you have a look at their record now, I'm pretty sure they're 31-47. So what could have been, man?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting, I guess, argument. It's probably fair as well. As you said, they've only played 21 games together. But on the other hand, I think even when one or two of them are out, they, you know, when you look at their list, they still have the potential to, I think, be a lot better than where they are right now. You know, currently sitting in 11th spot. And they, you know, they were in 9th spot just, I think, 10 games ago. So they're on a bit of a slide at the moment. And I think it's a bit of a, you know, it's a tough argument to have just because, you know, you look at the age of the team. I think injuries is always going to be a factor when your guys are that old. And, yeah, even with the injuries, I think they're better than 11th place.
Yeah, look, I definitely think they're better than 11th place. I do understand the injury point, though, because that's the whole reason they brought that team together is to rely on the fact that they would be playing together for most of the season. Now, I do understand your point. You know, you're right. Probably at the age of LeBron James at 37, you probably need to take into account that, yeah, you may be healthy at the start of the season, but it's very unlikely that that'll be the case throughout the full 82 games. To look and quote some of Anthony Davis's comments, I'll just read them out here. This is Anthony Davis today, actually. We never did all year. I think us three, being me, Bron, and Russ, played 21 games together. We didn't expect us to only play 21 games together. It's been that kind of year. Either I'm in or he's in. And the times that we do play together, we look really good. Again, 11-10. So I wouldn't say really good, but you'd give him a pass. Quoting him again, it's been tough not being able to fully reach our potential as far as us three being on the floor, seeing what we could be. But that being said, we also have enough to win basketball games. We'll continue to fight this way and give ourselves a chance, and we'll see what happens. So that chance, that fight to try and see what happened, obviously, with the NBA introducing the play-in tournament a couple of years ago, you need to be 10th rank in your conference at the lowest to make it. So they are currently one spot outside of it. The Spurs are in that 10th spot, a game ahead. But their main star, Murray, he is out at the moment, actually. I read that today. So there's a chance there for the Lakers to jump them, but their next and final four games of the regular season are tough. They've got the Suns in Phoenix, the Warriors in San Francisco, then they've got the Thunder at home, and then they play the Denver Nuggets in Denver. So, you know, during the regular season, I'd probably say they're about to go on a 1-3 streak, probably only win that one game against the Thunder. But you never know if all three of them are healthy and can play. You know, LeBron James wanting to keep up that averaging 30 points because he's currently leading the scoring title. He'll probably want to stay there. And I think for Davis and Westbrook, they're just going to want to support him and get a win any way possible. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they get there. But Blaze, if they do not, would this be the biggest fail in NBA history if they don't even reach the play-in tournament, let alone the NBA playoffs?
Yeah, you'd probably have to say it would be. Obviously, I'm not an NBA historian, so I'm probably not across all the big teams that have failed in the past. But, you know, certainly in the last kind of 10 years in this time that the super teams have kind of been created, we've seen all of them have at least some level of success, making finals and the championships. So I think to not even make the finals, especially, as you say, with the play-in tournament, would be a pretty big fail.
Yeah, I'm probably going to side with you, although I do fully agree with Anthony Davis's reasons as to, you know, why it would excuse it being classified as a fail. I still think, you know, you had LeBron and Westbrook playing together for a while. You had Westbrook and James playing, Westbrook and Davis playing there for a while. So, although all three of them probably haven't been on the court as much as possible, I'd still put it down there. But, I don't know who to blame for that. I guess it's some of the front office for putting that team together. But, Blaze, that'll do us for episode 38 of the Practice Drill. Again, guys, if you'd like to stay up to date on all things NRL, AFL, rugby union, cricket, and NBA basketball, go and follow us on Twitter at @T_PracticeDrill. Blaze, in the next week of sport, what are you looking forward to? Because I'll tell you what, I've got a random one.
Well, I don't know if we're thinking along the same wavelength, but, you know, I'm thinking about NRL fantasy. The inaugural Practice Drill Cup this weekend. You know, we're certainly friends now on the podcast, but I think once we finish this podcast, we won't be speaking until Sunday night when all the NRL games are finished and hopefully I've won the Practice Drill Cup for the first time.
Look, that just sounds like you're backing down from a bit of chirp in the group chat. But look, if that's the way you want to play it for this weekend, you know, just focus on the game ahead. I don't blame you. But look, I'll be coming out from the media. I'm getting out on the front foot. I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the dub there. But for me, it's not a topic that we usually talk about, but the Masters this weekend, I'm actually pretty keen. Tiger Woods out on the practice greens today, getting absolutely mobbed. Played with a young Aussie, Cam Davis, on the practice greens today, which is pretty cool. He's from Sydney. I'm really looking forward to that because did an assignment on golf not long ago and it's got me into it, pretty gripped. So, but anyway, Blaze, we'll talk on Sunday apparently, since you don't want to talk to me before then. But look, mate, enjoy your sport and same to everyone else out there. It's going to be a big week of sport ahead.
See ya.